You know that wellness goal you set at the start of the year? It's not too late to stick with it and make your future self proud, especially with the all-in-one nutrition shake from Ka'Chava. With 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, adaptogens, and more. No fillers, no nonsense, just the highest quality ingredients. Stick with your wellness goals. Go to Ka'Chava.com and use code NEWS for 15% off. That's K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com, code NEWS.
Originally trained as a brewer, Fraser Kennedy brings a deep understanding of fermentation structure and mouthfeel to tea. Applying brewing discipline to preserve rather than mask tea's natural character. After relocating to Yunnan in the early 2010s, he immersed himself in the region's tea landscapes and traditions, developing a mission to share Yunnan's flavor with the world. Chalu, named for the ancient tea road, cold brews single origin tea sourced directly from producers, finishing them with minimal, locally rooted elements to create a structured, wine-adjacent tea experience suitable for Michelin-level tables. Kennedy's work sits at the intersection of tea tradition and contemporary beverage innovation, reflecting a broader shift towards authenticity, provenance, and tea-first thinking in global RTD and hospitality markets. Today on the Tea Biz podcast, we're with Fraser Kennedy in Yunnan, China. He's talking about Chalu, an elegantly bottled non-alcoholic RTD brand showcasing Trend 8 from our State of the Tea Industry series, Real Tea in RTD. Welcome to the program, Fraser.
Hey, Dan. Thank you so much for having me on the podcast today. Really excited to be here and chat with you about all things tea. That's a really cool way to start, I think, is how does Chalu fit into this kind of real tea aspect, because that's something that's absolutely core to the brand, and it's really important to me personally, is to be able to promote tea through the vessel of the brand itself. So when we sort of began to conceptualize Chalu itself, the fundamental was to bring a taste of Yunnan to the world. It's kind of been a mission of mine for many years through similar beverage businesses that I've run here in Yunnan, but really focusing in on the tea that's grown in this province became something of almost an obsession for me and my partners as we began to bring this brand to life. The really unique aspect of Yunnan, and the reason why we want to share specifically the tea from this province, is the geography, right? We have everything from the high alpine all the way down to these sort of scenic jungles on the borders with Vietnam. Which, when you have this kind of gradient within a single province, opens up all these different microclimates and landscapes and different kind of terroir that brings so many different growing regions within one kind of small geopolitical space, right? So what we have here is the ability to find all these different kinds of teas within one region. And that's really important for us to then push out through Chalu, right? So if we have a unique high altitude growing oolong or this really beautiful jasmine from the south of Yunnan, we don't want to kind of muddy that by layering it with a whole bunch of other materials. For us, we really want to be able to showcase the flavor of the land itself.
Explain how the tea's made, including your juice fusion, microbubbles, bottling, and other appealing characteristics. Taking our listeners through the process will help them better understand the brand.
Yeah, absolutely. So keeping that utmost respect for the tea and the way that we process it then becomes very important, right? We just take them directly from our producers, no middlemen, no warehousing. So this is, we can really trace that origin right back to the land itself, right? Teas come in, processed as a cold brewing process. We cold brew for two reasons, really. One is to kind of respect those flavors without high temperature kind of driving off stuff of volatiles. You really kind of keep the raw flavor of the tea intact, right? Some of the more earthy tones, some of the very light top note tones, especially with something like a jasmine, right? This is very much just a perfume note from the scenting process. But also, when you look at the way that Chinese people drink tea, and particularly here in Yunnan, these teas are produced and meant to be drunk through washing processes, right? So when you're making a cup of tea, it's that steeping process. Of course, you discard that first pour. But then with each subsequent steep and pour, that wash that it goes through, and anywhere from maybe 1 to 10 washes, done more, sometimes 15, 16, flavors unlock and open as the tea leaves kind of rehydrate and some of the more bitter volatiles are removed, and then more subtle aromatic stuff that come out. Now, if you were just doing a single infusion hot brew on a sort of macro scale, it'd be very hard, I think, to be able to capture some of those really subtle nuances that come out maybe around like wash 3 or 4. But with a cold brewing process, because it's low and slow, the temperature, you know, nice and cool, you kind of almost get like a really nice strata of maybe wash like 2 through 6, all kind of combined together. Now, of course, the longer we steep it in that cold water, the more flavor we get out, up to a certain point where, of course, you know, we maybe have some micro issues or we're kind of over extracted. But we can sort of manipulate that time scale to mimic some of these beautiful nuances that you would otherwise miss with this like single hot, hard and fast kind of process. Then after we've finished our cold brewing, sort of a unique aspect for us, it's just a balance with a little touch of oak. The reason why we wanted to bring that in is it's very Yunnan in its characteristic. This is a Mongolian oak, you know, inherent to the region that grows wild in the mountains around Dali. And the oak is then harvested and it's toasted. It's actually used primarily in this region for winemakers who want to add like a little bit of a local flavor. For us, we use that to balance the characteristics of the tea itself. This is about kind of enriching tannin profile. In the case of our oolong, building a little bit more kind of smokiness in the background, some of those roasted aromas. Even with our jasmine, a tiny little touch, sort of, it's like a little pinch of black pepper on the top of your pasta. It just brings out a little bit sort of energy that was kind of missing from the tea. Because it's just that simple cold brew, we need to enrich it to make it more of that sort of structured beverage, right? Okay, then you mentioned about the juice as well. A little bit of a controversial is that we do add a touch of grape juice to our chalu as well. This is grapes that are grown in Yunnan, so staying with that whole local terroir kind of fundamental. The grapes are a muscat varietal, predominantly grown actually for table grapes for eating, but the aromas are absolutely on point. These are really like punchy aromatics with a really soft, subtle sweet. We only use a little touch. This is kind of the, you know, for lack of a better descriptor, a dash of soy sauce on your dumplings, right? Like this is just to give a little bit more kind of depth, layers to it. The reason why we do that is it kind of holds together the structure overall for the tea. You have, you know, you have your polyphenols extracted from the tea, from the oak. There's a certain amount of proteins that are coming out of those teas as well. The juice sort of binds it all together, builds body to it, right? Otherwise, it should be lacking something of a mouthfeel. And when we move into our final stage with the carbonation, if it's not fully kind of enrobed together, you would fall flat. And, you know, our ultimate goal here is obviously to respect that tea, but to create something that has its place at a Michelin star table, right? It can be poured in place champagne or another sparkling wine. And therefore, it's important for us to build this, you know, from the ground up with all the fundamental building blocks of a really amazing beverage. For me, this draws a lot on my previous career, which was as a brewer. I was a beer brewer, now I'm a tea brewer. But for our beer brewing fundamentals was all about building the body to the liquid. And that's really where I think I take a lot of my cues for that process. So post-blending, then we go ahead, filter. As you know, you'll see a lot of teas on the market, finished beverages that will have a lot of haze. For us, we did want to go for quite a nice, clear, you know, visually attractive liquid. We have a clear glass bottle, and it was important for us that this looks absolutely stunning. Just, you know, super sexy when it's sitting on a bar or on your table. After the filtration, carbonation. We force carbonate using CO2, just pressurizing our tanks. And we carbonate as high as we can on our equipment, both for our tank and then for our filling equipment. Take it up to nearly 10 grams per liter. So you're kind of moving into very much sparkling wine category, to the territory of that really fine bubble. Again, because we've spent all that time sort of working on the structure and the body of the liquid, we're able to really encapsulate those bubbles with the surface tension of the liquid, creating smaller, finer bubbles that will last longer and have a more kind of sensory, you could say like a bit of sensory perception in your mouth when you drink it, right? It's not like those big sort of chunky bubbles you have in a soda. These are really that kind of more elegant, more soft bubbles that you'll have in a sparkling wine. We package in a 750 ml cork and cage, and then it's off for labeling and off to the world from there. We do pasteurize after we pack. We do a very low temperature pasteurization. The reason why we do this, of course, it's going out globally, and we want to make sure that it's not going to kick off any sort of spontaneous fermentation. It does have a shelf life to it of 2 years, but we also didn't want to add any preservatives. In my mind, pasteurization was the lesser of two evils. If we went down like the sulfites route, it would absolutely destroy the flavors. At least with a low temp pasteurization, you still have minimal thermal impact on the product. It's just able to keep that longer shelf life for a global market.
Describe the market for bottled tea and fine dining, specifically sparkling RTD, aligned with the low and no alcohol trend. You're a young company already with distribution in respected restaurants in Asia and Europe.
We're in a really interesting time right now. My background in booze, right? And as a brewer, especially in the craft brewing scene, man, we thought we were unstoppable. We thought that beer was going to rule the world forever and ever. And now I'm seeing all my old colleagues, you know, losing their jobs, quitting, moving into new beverage spaces. And personally, this was a huge catalyst for us to make the pivot. Actually, our company was founded as a distilling company. Our intention was very much the same as we have right now, the mission of taking flavors from Yunnan and sharing it to the world, but doing that through distilled spirit, gins with botanicals, rums using local sugarcane. But it was really at the end of 2024 that this kind of big shift happened. I know it's sort of been happening maybe in the West for some time, but this was very much like a post-COVID 90-degree turn for the market here in China. And like, we lost our distributor, our main distributor, who had been with us for years, taking all of our gins. They went bankrupt. We were trying to open up new markets in Hong Kong, Singapore, Korea. Nobody wanted to talk. They were like, no, now's not a good time to be taking on another spirit brand. There was a conversation I had with a distributor in Hong Kong. She was like, look, I'm slashing my spirits portfolio. I'm cutting that down by 70%, and I'm going to increase my non-alcoholics by 50%. Come back to me if you have anything that could fit into that space. A lot of people moving into this RTD space, something that we'd played with on a liquor side before, you know, adding our liquor into like tea-based beverages, teas, fruits. So it was something that we'd kind of been skirting around, but not specifically focusing in on the tea or on the, you know, on the process itself. It was just more or less, you know, trying to throw everything at the wall and see what sticks. As we start to see this category really develop now, what I'm seeing is people kind of doubling down on storytelling. Huge aspect. Everyone wants their product to have a really unique kind of provenance to it, or at least something that helps it stand out. Because as we saw with like hard seltzers or even beer before that, there was just so much sameness in the industry. And like, okay, having a different label on the can, great, but what's in the can is so important now. And as you see hospitality start to really pick up on this trend, you know, with bars dipping over to non-alcoholic menus, restaurants really going from like the token offering of a Pellegrino or maybe like some freshly juice on the menu and start to like expand out that offering, they need to fill that with really interesting products. And what I'm seeing is consumers going for flavor now. I think story is still very important, but what I've seen is that consumers will grab a non-alcoholic, even if they are an alcoholic drink, over an alcoholic option, if the flavor really speaks to them, if that's something that's intriguing, something that they actually really want to be able to drink, not just like a kind of a faffy, sugary something, but something with real, true character. And that's where I start to see this trend going now. And it's what's really exciting for us. And what I really want to like nosedive into is to be able to build flavor.
Tell me the story of you.
So I first came to China in 2013. It was supposed to be 1 year. I was going to take a 1 year break after university, see some sights, go back home, settle down, build a career. I was a brewer at the time. So coming here, I was intrigued to learn that the craft brewing industry in China was just starting to kick off. So this was something that I thought, okay, let me see what's going on. I love to chase the new frontier. Always. It's what's always driven me. What's over the next hill? And at that time in China, being able to grow something from the ground up, being on the frontier of something was absolutely incredible. And it's still what drives me today. But everything sort of changes, you know, and the industry in Shanghai that I was involved in never really kind of came to fruition, not the way I thought, not the way many other people thought. So I was kind of left scratching my head like, hey, do I stay or do I go? And the stay was very limited. It was like a handful of companies that I could kind of maybe be part of something, but not quite in the capacity I was hoping. Go was very attractive, lots of very cool things happening in the States, Europe, but ultimately, it was a quick trip down to Yunnan. Just on a whim, a friend invited me down, spent a weekend with him and his family. I was actually filming for a beer project, but got off track and just sort of started exploring, going hiking with him, really learning about Tibetan culture and sort of Yunnan in general. That really inspired me to look towards Yunnan as my new frontier. And Yunnan was just starting to open up, but in terms of like really growing and developing as a province, Yunnan is in the southwest of China. It borders Myanmar, Vietnam, Thailand. It's very small and kind of out of the way. And for a long time, it was poverty struck and had kind of like this beautiful untouched nature, but like kind of so far removed from the big cities that there was not really a lot of development going on. So I came back to Shanghai. I talked to my wife. I said, hey, what do you think if we moved to Yunnan and jumped on this growth, jumped into this new frontier and, you know, being pioneers literally on the border of China, right? My wife's from Shanghai, right? Big city girl. But I said, okay, just take a trip. We'll come down. We'll go for another hike with my friend. We'll go explore some mountains and see if it vibes or not. We did it. She loved it. We packed our bags and we moved down a month later and just didn't look back. You know, the mission statement I have now about taking a taste of Yunnan's strength of the world was very much in its infancy at that point. I just came here with kind of a blind faith that I'd figure out as I went along, right? And we did. We just started experimenting. R&D has always been my strong suit. As a brewer, that was my favorite part to work on. I really developed a lot of cool things, my time at Goose Island, and being able to do this with botanicals that I didn't even know existed until yesterday, right? Going down to a market and picking up Buddha's hand for the first time, being like, what is this? You know, herbs, spices, tea. It was all here. And it was all just so ingrained in local culture that food, any meal was an inspiration. We began to create, first of all, the spirits brand. And then through those changes in market, I was kind of left scratching my head. Like, if I want to continue this mission that I've now developed about taking a taste of Yunnan to the world, what would that look like as a non-alcoholic? And we played with tea. Yunnan is the home of tea for China, through oral history, beliefs to going back over a millennia, right? And for me, this was like kind of a watershed moment where I was thinking, what can I do with Yunnan tea that will absolutely respect it and be able to take it to the world in such a format that it kind of explains itself? I really want to be able to present this tea so that even if you're a tea drinker or not, even if you're a non-alcoholic drinker or not, you'll be able to pick up Kalu and just enjoy it. People kind of didn't quite get it at first. So we actually look to the path for our final inspiration, right? Kalu in Mandarin means tea road, the tea road. And the Chama is a fundamental glue that now stuck all of these ideas together. We're not reinventing anything here. We're not even doing anything new. We're simply following in those footsteps of those ancient pioneers of the Lagos who took their mules through this very town that I'm in right now, traveling with Yunnan tea from east to west. All we've simply done is just put it into a format for the modern table, and the same story, the same tea, just in a beautiful, elegant package. And I hope to be able to share that with everyone in the entire world.
When you look 5 years ahead, why are you optimistic about where tea is headed?
I think tea is having a bit of a moment right now, right? It's really awesome time to be in. I don't think I had this laser focus on being part of the tea world so much as just trying to innovate that amazing non-alcoholic beverage. But now that I'm in the tea world, and I'm so glad I am, dude, like, it really reminds me of my early days being a brewer, that kind of community of people. I'm just so stoked to be part of this community. I'm seeing more, and coming back to the innovation, is the incredible development that we are now being able to produce, both through technology, using climate change to our advantage, and just being able to give people a little bit, like your mentor, kind of that thirst for knowledge, right? Being able to satisfy that thirst for knowledge. So Providence is massive. Hey, I'm seeing producers making teas in Portugal now. Dude, this is crazy, right? People were doing black matcha to kind of get past the fake matcha skepticism or the lack of supply of genuine matcha. Even coffee leaf oolong. You know, this is one thing I came across the other day. Just some guys packed a bunch of coffee leaves, put them through a post-harvest process of making oolong tea, you know, fermentation, oxidation, and then roasting it, posting it to get the flavors just right. This is really cool. This is what makes me excited to be doing what I'm doing right now. We still want to be able to make sure that we keep it, you know, tea for tea's sake. But as long as the innovations are done in a positive way with the consumer's kind of preference for learning more and understanding more about tea and really going back to that idea of giving them an incredible flavor, then I think we're on a good track, and I'm just really excited to be on this track with all the other producers at the moment.
Produced by Atavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.
Studies show that 100% of everybody in the world wants to curl up indoors and do nothing because it's so darn cold out there. That's why many people are turning to Bombas, whose pillowy plush slippers and warm merino wool socks have been said to be the most comfortable in the history of feet. Bombas products have been found to boost coziness by up to 1 million percent. Okay, enough fake statistics, but could Bombas socks and slippers really be the cure? Go to bombas.com/audio and use code audio for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code audio.